If you've been to the Broadway show Hamilton, you know that the material was derived from historical sources. The composer-lyricist Lin-Manuel Miranda used letters and transcripts of events, but he takes liberties too. The song Story of Tonight, for example, is an event that would take place 2 years later than the rest of the play. Okay, writers take license in their works. Welcome back to Accelerando. My name is Paula Tuttle, and today we're looking at lyrics, in particular, the process of writing words to songs, or songs to words. I don't think we care too much if the historical material doesn't line up linearly in a play like Hamilton. If the composer thinks an event sets the stage for the main story, it seems valid. Lots of composers of operas and musicals didn't write the words to their works. Someone else did. Sometimes there's a collaboration, and sometimes the two parts of the creation are completely separated, like a Chinese wall. In the case of Hamilton, it was one person, so Lin-Manuel Miranda is in the minority of composers writing their own lyrics. Andrew Lloyd Webber worked with three lyricists, Charles Hart, Richard Stilgo, and Mike Batt. Three people contributed to the words for Phantom of the Opera. But there's also Gaston Leroux, the writer of the original novel in French. Sources and collaboration all played a heavy part in that hit song. What's the right way to write lyrics? Do the words come first, or the music? Elton John worked with Bernie Taupin on a lot of songs, and with Tim Rice on a few musicals. Elton said in an early interview, "When Bernie brings me lyrics, I read them, and then I get the first line of the song and deal with that first. I never work to the chorus or the hook. I start at the top and gradually work down. I can't do it any other way. Your song went straight off in 10 minutes. I never take more than half an hour or three quarters of an hour because I get so bored, I just give up."
If I was a sculptor, then again, no, or a man who makes potions in a traveling show. I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is my song, and this one's for you.
Bernie Taupin spoke to Caroline Boucher in an interview for Disc and Music Echo about their process, saying, "We never collaborate on anything. It's purely a matter of giving him the lyrics, him working on them, and getting together afterwards. It wouldn't be easier doing it the other way around. If he had a tune and said, 'Write something around this,' I wouldn't be able to explain things. I wouldn't have room to say anything." So Bernie would give Elton the words he wrote, they wouldn't see each other until the music was written, and they never had any further discussions. He just accepted the music over the words, saying it was almost telepathic the way they understood each other. In opera, we call the lyrics the libretto, from the Italian word for book, or actually booklet. Libretti for operas, cantatas, and oratorios were very often written by poets in the 17th and 18th centuries. And the relationship between librettists and composers varies. The libretto doesn't always come first. We can look at the operas by Puccini, Mascagni, Rimsky-Korsakov, and Glinka, where they wrote the musical passages and had the librettist write the words to fit. Then, on the opposite end of the spectrum, a famed 18th century librettist and poet that went by the pen name Metastasio. He wrote libretti that was used by multiple composers. Adriano in Syria was used by no less than 60 composers, including Veracini, J.C. Bach, and Pergolesi. Some composers worked very closely with the librettist. And I always liked the story about Stephen Sondheim and Leonard Bernstein collaborating on West Side Story. Sondheim bristled at the idea of being a mere librettist at first, but he was convinced by Oscar Hammerstein that it would be a stepping stone in his career. Bernstein and Sondheim found themselves sharing duties as lyricist and composer because Bernstein was distracted with his production of Candide. Originally, Bernstein and Sondheim were to co-write the lyrics, and Bernstein write all the music, but in the end, Bernstein gave up his co-librettist credit. So Bernstein wrote a few lyrics, and Sondheim, at the very least, developed the music in Something's Coming.
Could be, who knows? There's something due any day. I will know right away, soon as it shows. It'd make him cannonballing down through the sky, gleaming its eye bright as a rose.
Some composers do write all their own lyrics or librettos. One of them is Wagner, another Berlioz. I think it's an insight into the creative process. Is it the chicken or the egg that comes first? Well, it depends. The decision to write the music or the words first varies even within some composers' careers. Richard Rodgers wrote his music first, but when he later began his collaboration with Hammerstein, the words were always written first. Some librettists became so prolific they started writing their own operas, like Arrigo Boito. He wrote for Verdi, among others, and he eventually wrote Mephistopheles. One of Tito Capabianco's often produced operas at Pittsburgh Opera and elsewhere. So you ask, did Boito just want more of the limelight? Is that why he wrote a few operas? The librettist for Verdi's Falstaff and Othello made a few missteps in his career. He somehow offended Verdi, and Verdi went on to trash Boito's opera Mephistopheles, saying he aspires to originality but succeeds only at being strange. Not nice. Boito's reputation as the librettist remained untarnished, even though his own operas, the ones where he composed both the music and lyrics, were deemed failures at the time. Songwriters/composers, they take on double duty, but they probably prefer it. In the case of Boito, he did want to get more of the credit. Why not? The operas of Verdi were getting him noticed, but in the end, it was only the composer that everybody remembered. How many people can name the librettists of any opera? But most, or at least many, know the composers' names are Andrew Lloyd Webber, Giuseppe Verdi, or Elton John. David Byrne, the founding member of Talking Heads, he writes in his book, How Music Works, that he took the writing process from the opposite direction than what he was used to, when he wrote the words and music for the disco musical Here Lies Love. The story is based on the life of Imelda Marcos, and Byrne started the project by compiling written material available to him from letters, speeches, interviews, conversations, and real quotes. He looked to the cadence and the character of the words and waited for the music to emerge from them. Byrne, like many composers, was used to writing music and then finding words to fit the music. For David Byrne, the music came first. But in the Imelda Marcos musical, he felt he had to start from the words first. Even the title comes from the epitaph Imelda Marcos wanted on her tombstone, Here Lies Love. Byrne took all the material he found and treated it as a gift. In the title song, Byrne has Imelda sing words that are a quote from a speech when she sings, "The most important things are love and beauty." He feels those words would sound corny or ironic if they hadn't come right out of the character's own mouth in real life. Byrne says the process he developed while working on Here Lies Love differed from his earlier process, where he would write a melody and some nonsensical syllables, and over time the syllables would morph into real words. He would go through a period where he did different activities and allow the phrases to emerge. He might be driving or jogging, and some phrases would turn into lyrics. He said, I never have writer's block, but sometimes things do slow down. At those times, I ask myself if my conscious mind might be thinking too much. At that point, I need surprises and weirdness from the depths. So he has a process that he says distracts a part of the mind. He calls it the gatekeeper, so that the other part of his mind can work out the lyrics. I get that, and I love that he explained it in such depth in his book, How Music Works. Because every composer has a different process, but they're not really all that different, even though they do things in different orders, and a lot of them change the order. Byrne consciously changed the order he did things, putting the words first in the Imelda Marcos musical, because the words needed to come first. A lot of writers, artists, architects, they say that a blank slate is a scary thing. They prefer to have a thing to start with, a libretto, a script, a poem.
These are really the thoughts of all men in all ages and lands.
The American composer Paula Kemper has written operas based on historical subjects and books. But her latest project, putting Walt Whitman's Song of Myself to music, is not only a task of epic proportions, it has 52 parts, but is also singled out as one of the most important, some saying the greatest American poem ever written. Kemper uses the exact words by Whitman, and the project took several years. But when she showed the manuscript to enthusiasts of Whitman, her libretto came under scrutiny. Sometimes for emphasis, she would repeat a word. God forbid. Karen Carpenter is the president of the Walt Whitman Initiative, and she interviewed Kemper while the project was in its last months. She asked Kemper why she repeated words and other very minor changes. But Paula defends her emphasis, saying that Whitman was letting go of limits. Why put limits on her emphatic interpretation? As she worked through the 52 parts, Kemper said economy prevailed. She wanted to be true to the poems. But then a publisher criticized her leaving out the capitalizations that Whitman used at the beginning of each sentence. So the removal of the caps was just to influence the flow, the way she envisioned it. And there were very few repeated words for emphasis.
Is the common air that bathes the glow.
This sounds like the most restrictive libretto a composer could use. But remember Elton John? He had no qualms about using Bernie Taupin's exact words. So the difference I can see is that Walt Whitman's poem was so highly revered to the extent that people were having a near cult-like experience or reverence for the text before Kemper ever took her pen to it. Some artists, composers, and writers prefer the limits. Definitely better than a blank page. Paula Kemper is a close friend. I attended the production of her first opera, Patience and Sarah. And before that, she wrote me a piece for cello and piano. And since then, she was included in an American showcase at Pittsburgh Opera with her work, The Bridges of San Luis, based on Thornton Wilder's book. And she's been presented by several opera companies, her productions of Truth and The Captivation of Eunice Williams. I'll put some links in the show notes, and I hope to have her on the show in the future. And for now, thanks for listening. If you wish, you can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and elsewhere. Or consider sharing this episode with a friend or someone you think will enjoy it. Thanks for supporting composers and their live performances. I'll see you next time.